You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Kristen, and I'm here with my co-host Liza and Rose, who is with the Alzheimer's and Dementia Alliance of Wisconsin. So before we went to break, Rose, I was trying to ask, I'm just really impressed by how much of an equal position you're giving to caregivers in your programming as you are to people with a diagnosis of either, well, now I'm understanding, of any type of dementia, right? And I'm wondering, how did the organization get to that place? Or more importantly, can it be a model to other organizations? It's just really striking me in our conversation, just how much you're valuing the caregiver as an equal component.
Right, exactly. So it actually was this past year that we decided to do a support group for people with dementia because of people with dementia asking for a support group and caregivers saying, you know, I have a place to talk about what's going on, but my loved one doesn't. And so it really was because of the advocacy of people with dementia and us listening and trying to see what would work for them that encouraged us to do that. And it's definitely very valuable and important.
Yeah. Okay. Now it's totally flip-flop of what I thought it was, which is great. It's good. That's why we have these conversations. So you're saying you guys had support groups for the caregivers first.
Mm-hmm.
And why do you think you were able to do that as an organization? Put the caregivers, because if we think about the Autism Society or I can't remember anybody else we've had here right now, the Epilepsy Foundation, the last thing they're thinking about is the caregivers. They're always thinking about the person with autism or the person with epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding or listening to you that it's almost flip-flopped. Am I correct?
Yeah. And I think it's because here in Dane County, what's really great is that we're catching people very early on in the disease. So they're able to communicate, you know, more effectively and be able to process things more. But, you know, we're really a big thing that we stand for is, you know, caregiver stress and how much that affects, you know, not only yourself, but your loved one.
Exactly.
And that's really been a strong thing that we're your partner along the journey because it's an equal amount of stress for both sides.
Oh, I love it. I love that you guys see it that way and you're addressing it. That's excellent. And I'm hoping to drive more organizations to look at your model because it would be great for the caregivers to be seen as equally stressed, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's kind of the whole purpose of why Liza and I are putting this all together.
Yeah,
you tend to be the tag along or the, you know, the last thought.
You can see why they are a role model. And in so many, I guess, specifically nonprofit organizations that revolve around disability and illness, you see caregiver in part of their mission. But then when you explore their website, it's like, where exactly are they supporting the caregiver other than maybe to give them some website links? So it is truly amazing the work that you guys are doing. And on that note, I saw on the website that you have respite grants available. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how people can get connected?
Yeah, so we have a respite grant coordinator, Mary Severson, and she's in charge of the AFCSP grant, which is a grant specifically for people with dementia to receive types of funds for in-home care, as well as in adult day centers. And a good way to get connected to that is, you know, reaching out and seeing if you're eligible for that type of grant. But Mary's another person that you just have to pick up the phone and call and see if you'd be eligible for it.
That is wonderful. And I'm sure that the respite grants are always in need of funding and more funding could be helpful. So can you tell us about some of the upcoming fundraisers that you have and other ways that people can sponsor your organization?
Yeah, so we have some third party kind of fundraising events up and coming, such as the Sip and Chip golf event, as well as Bailey's Run, which is a really fun event to be at the winery. But more importantly, our biggest fundraisers are our walks that are in August, September. And I think we even have one in October weekend across Wisconsin. And it's, you know, a really great time to see how many people are affected by this disease, as well as raising funds for not only the caregiver grant, but also some of the programming that we do at our organization.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I saw the Bailey's Run and I saw wine and I thought, oh, Kristen and I can get behind this 100%.
Well, and then my first thought was, oh, do you get Bailey's at the end of the run? But I'm fine with just wine. So that's great. Well, those sound like really fun events and a great organization and you know, process to support. So let's go back to more of like your experience and your perspective on what it's been like to be working with this organization and the caregivers. And so as a caregiver, I think oftentimes I realize I can get lost in the weeds, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what I should know. And I want to give you the microphone and people that work with caregivers an opportunity to say something that you wish all caregivers knew. Right. So if you had like three things that you were like, I wish you guys all understood this, what would they be?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is reaching out for help early on before you think you need it. If that's, mm-hmm. you know, calling an organization like us to see, you know, what resources are out there, but even tapping into family and friends, even, you know, a simple thing like making a meal or helping with housekeeping, because you can't do this alone. Another thing that I would say is blame the disease, not the person. With dementia, there are a lot of, you know, personality changes and maybe behaviors as well. And this person that maybe you've been married for 60 years is now acting like a complete stranger. And it's really hard to know, is this my husband who's making me annoyed or is this the dementia? So we always think it's good to blame the disease because of how awful it is and how many behaviors that can come from it.
And I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think the third thing is, you know, to know that you're not alone. This disease can make people, for both the caregiver and person with dementia, isolate themselves. And we see a lot of people stop going to social events because of this. So know that you're not alone and that there are people out there who are going through the same thing. And it can be very helpful to talk to others. So again, just reaching out for that help is very important.
Those are great recommendations and advice. And I always wait, I say this every week, that I always wait for people to say, you're not alone, mm-hmm. because it comes up. And you said that, but then you also said, you can't do this alone, which I think is, you know, a good thing for people to hear, because a lot of people feel like they have to do it alone, or they need to do it alone, or they're the only ones that could possibly, you know, take care of this person. And it's not realistic. You know, you have to be able to reach out for supports, if anything, for yourself and your own well-being. And on that note, what is some advice or recommendations that you would give to a person that knows a family that's going through this? So maybe the neighbors, you know, the wife is taking care of the husband. How can they help out?
Yeah, I think this is a very important question, because what we've heard from the people that we work with is that friends kind of disappear when they're diagnosed with dementia, or they're fearful of telling them because they almost think that dementia is contagious. Mm-hmm. And so I think the best way to support, you know, your friend or loved one who's going through this experience is really just listen to what they're going through and not judge them for anything or make any assumptions. And asking the person with dementia what they're going through as well. A lot of times people ask a caregiver, you know, how is your husband or wife or whatever, you know, whoever is doing.
Sure.
And that can make the person with dementia, you know, even more stigmatized and feel alone as well.
Excellent. Because you're saying they aren't actually talking to the person directly.
Right. They're not talking to the person directly. They're asking about them, you know, through their loved one.
Sure. And that makes some sense. And that's where I want to ask this question about, because you said a lot of times here in Dane County, we are catching people early on in the disease. What can we say to them about the best way they can work with their caregivers?
So the people with the disease working with their caregivers.
Right.
Okay.
So essentially, like, what advice or recommendation, if I'm receiving the care and I'm still able to understand it's because I have dementia?
Sure.
Right. What's something that I should be told or could be told about how I can support the caregiver while I'm still, is it okay to say while I'm still cognitively available? Like, I don't even know the language that's okay to say around.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think the number one important thing is that, you know, if the person with dementia is able to, and they have the insight of what they have, is to communicate how they're feeling to their care partner. I think a lot of times care partners don't realize that, you know, when you huff or when you sigh, that makes me very anxious. And, you know, it makes me want to not even ask you any more questions. So I think it's really important to just have that open line of communication between the two.
Sure.
And as well as, you know, just because you have a diagnosis of dementia doesn't mean that your life is over and there's not a, you know, a good quality life that you can live and strive for.
Okay.
And I think those are, two important things to consider, because in helping yourself, you're then helping your care partner as well.
Sure. And that whole topic of language is, are you typically using the term care partner instead of caregiver?
We try to. Yeah. And, you know, it's really about what people feel comfortable with referring sure. themselves, because some people say, I'm a caregiver, I'm not a care partner. While others, you know, so we, you know, whatever people feel most comfortable with.
Right. That's what we try to do too. But I think it's interesting. I think for me, it feels so natural to call myself a caregiver because the person I'm taking care of is my adult child. So we've already mm-hmm. kind of had this different hierarchical, you know, relationship between parent and child. But when or if it's time to take care of a spouse, where it has been, you know, of a more sure. equal partnership all along, it probably would feel a little bit better to use the term care partner. So
right.
just interesting. You just got me thinking a lot today, Rose.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And we didn't share, both Kristen and I got into this because we have adult children mm-hmm. with autism, and Kristen's daughter, Nicole, has epilepsy and intellectual developmental. Oh,
that's okay. An intellectual disability.
Intellectual
too.
Disability.
It's a whole mouthful. It's a whole mouthful.
Easy
but basically,
for me to say.
She's special needs.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, we know what that world is like, but if you could tell us a little bit how caring for someone with Alzheimer's or dementia is different, maybe some of the added stressors, responsibilities, or tasks that specific type of caregiving is required.
Yeah. So I think, you know, just like you were saying, is that it's different when it's your spouse, because this is a change in relationship for the two of you with this disease. So it can be emotionally very hard, just like any caregiving, but especially, you know, trying to navigate this change of disease. And also dementia is different every day. What might work one day might not work the next day. And it's really hard because when you meet one person with dementia, you meet one person with dementia.
Sure.
And so every type of dementia, you know, might progress in a similar way, but depending on that person's background, personality, if they have any other, you know, type of illnesses, that all plays a factor. So it's really tricky to figure out, and you can't really make a map way of how it's going to look, you know, 10 to 20 years from now, because some people can live with this disease for a very long time.
Yeah. And that's interesting that it's so personalized. I mean, it makes sense, right? Because it's the brain,
mm-hmm.
just like so many of the other things that we've been talking about. But dementia, Alzheimer's is a disease of the brain. And when you have a disease of the brain, it's going to be, you know, very much individualized, because our brains are so, and I didn't know this until I was teaching psychology. Do you know that our brains are as individualized as our fingerprints? I didn't know that.
I thought
they were more like our liver and our heart, and maybe our livers and hearts. I mean, there might be a cardiologist listening to this is like, well, she's really off. So are our hearts. But I just kind of thought all our organs were the same. And, you know, I just didn't understand how unique they were.
I would believe that. I feel pretty confident nobody has a brain like mine, for good or for bad. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. We'll be back after this short break.